Well, welcome to the Repost Non-League Show, and we're here for the next hour tonight. And I'm really pleased to say that joining us tonight from Bury Town, of course, it is the management team of Cole and Paul. So welcome, guys.
Good evening, guys.
And of course, also joining me, of course, as normal, of course, helping me with the show, of course, it is Liam. So welcome, Liam.
Thanks for having me again, Dave.
I always start the show off and say, like, is there anything you've seen that's a big surprise that's happened in non-league football over the last week? And something really sort of broke while we was on the manager's show last night. I mean, Jermaine Defoe to Woking? I mean,
this sounds a bit strange, but I actually had a couple of messages off him last night. And because I was on the A licence with Jermaine, and it's been quite a good week for our cohort. And we had a good group, and like 3 or 4 years ago, and or 3 years ago now. And two of the boys on our, well, four of them now are doing really well. So Carlos Cuesta is now the Palmer manager. He was on it. He was working with Arteta. Jermaine's obviously got the working job, and Colin Richards has got the Crawley job this week. And of course, obviously, Klebs is at Plymouth, and yeah, so it's been a really, really sort of, and I'm still at Rugby Town, so that says pretty much. So I've really done well after the back of that, I know, yeah. But yeah, it just a couple of congratulations messages last night. But it's been something he's wanted to get since he's left Spurs at the academy. It's been something that he's been going around observing a lot of clubs, a lot of sessions, and all over the places. So has Kazeem Richards, and you know, it's great to see that, you know, a top professional who I think I read yesterday is probably the sixth leading Premier League appearance maker or something like that. Maybe I'm wrong, I might be wrong. I'm sure I saw it yesterday. But to see him starting, as the guys on the screen here will understand, instead of going, trying to do almost what Rooney did and go right top level, Gerrard did it top level. You know, it takes something as a person to want to be really humble. He's a humble guy anyway, but to start at that level, I think says a lot about him as a person more than anything. He's prepared to go and, you know, work at Woking, great, brilliantly famous historical non-league club, but to go and sort of start at the bottom and really try and learn the, you know, the real nuts and the bolts of, as you guys know, the nuts and the bolts of non-league football is where it all starts. So for somebody with that reputation to start there, you've got to take your hat off to him. And it's a shame, actually, that more top names don't do that. But yeah, I'm over the moon for him. Yeah, he deserves it.
What was your thoughts when you saw that? Have you seen that over the weekend, over yesterday? Paul and Carl?
As Liam said, it's huge credit to him first and foremost for doing what he's doing, because his career speaks for itself. He was an incredible player. And Liam has got to know him personally, and the small snippets I've had across him, he seems an incredible individual, and everyone that knows him will speak incredibly highly of him. But it's also a testament to the world of non-league football, and it's probably a testament to the club that he stepped into, and any club of any non-league stature, really. It's growing, forever growing. So a guy that we've met, Curly's got his own show where he hops around different non-league clubs and chasing ex-pros that have stepped into non-league. And he said numerous times before, it's forever growing and the popularity within it is forever growing. Like I said, that both parties deserve a huge amount of credit. And I wish him nothing but the very, very best, because someone like him as a player, someone like him as a person, will go down and succeed, I'm sure, because he'll have the wraparounds to it, he'll have the know-how. I'm sure he'll get the right bodies to come in alongside him. He'll be working with good players. And then he will bounce straight back into the football league and hopefully goes on to have a really successful career in management.
Paul, you ever had any dealings with him?
No, I haven't. But like I said, it's good. It's good for the game all round, really. It'll be quite humbling for him, like I'm saying, to get to grips with everything, like I said. So hopefully he can get, you know, there's not many games left now, so hopefully he can get a real good feel for it and then jump into the pre-season and new season and roll with it.
Well, he might be able to nick some players from Tottenham, might he?
Well, I think he's got Paul Bracewell in with him, the old Everton Sunderland midfielder. He's with him, and I can't remember who he's got as his underneath that, but like you just said then, it's going to be that team of experienced heads around him, isn't it, to really help him through. And like I said, I know when I was Bedford United manager, and I spent a long time in the National League as number two at Leamington and Eton, and I always say that the manager's best signing he'll ever make will be his assistant, and I think I'll probably stick to that in terms of you need to have so many double acts that you see. Why did they get on? The good cop, bad cop, and all that sort of stuff. And I think sometimes you need to have somebody, that an assistant that's there to just actually not be a yes man and really sort of play devil's advocate, I suppose. And I'm sure you get it with you and your staff. And, you know, you need to be able to, ultimately you want to win a game of football. And I think sometimes it's, you know, it is a massive, that people underestimate what it is to have a good number two. And that, like, I think it's the best signing that managers maybe will make. And he's definitely got a good number two there.
Mm.
So that is that nail on the head. So I'm going to think what Muzzy does, because I'm sure I know what Muzzy will say. So I'm still looking for a good number two. But it was said it numerous times. So I've said my best signing was Muzzy. So I stepped straight from playing professionally into the world of non-league. And again, this isn't meant from an arrogant standpoint. It's certainly not meant from that standpoint at all, because I've followed non-league my whole career. Friends that have played it, when back in Bristol, I'd always go and watch non-league. But you are wrapped in a certain bubble as a professional player, and you're not exposed to the world of non-league as much as you should be or want to be, I guess. So Liam's hit the nail on the head. Best signing you could make is someone that's been around it, someone that knows it, someone that's got knowledge of it, someone that's got connections within it, someone that knows the players, someone that knows the settings you're going to, all the little nuggets you sort of might overlook. And anyone of any who steps into it with an arrogant head and thinks, no, I'm going to go at it and we're going to have a right good go at it and not know all those little bits attached to it, you're probably teeing yourself up for a slight bit of failure. So, like I said, we're talking about Jermaine Defoe, who's, like we said, is an incredibly intelligent guy and a well thought out guy, I'm sure. So he'll surround himself with the right people, as a lot of us have had to do. And Muzzy's been worth his weight in gold for me. He's been exceptional for me and really enjoyed it over the last 2 3/4 years that we've worked together.
And of course, there's got to be a congratulations to both of you as well. Both signed on for a little bit longer.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, I'm not sure if that's a congratulations or what you're doing. I'm not sure. absolutely love it, to be honest. Like I said, it's probably the best decision I made when I don't want to speak about previous life too much, but when I stopped playing, I naively thought you'd be able to step into the world of, right, I've done playing, you've finished on your own accord, you're now stepping into the world of retirement. Go about your life in a blissful manner, and anything you've just done for the last 30 years of your life, you don't need anymore. You can park football to one side, where the reality is you probably need it more than ever. So I had a fortunate meeting with an ex-teammate of mine, Alan Lee, who is a director of football at a school called Colford. I'm a director of football at a private school called St. Joe. I was coinciding the two while still playing for Ipswich and Colchester. I would go into the college in the afternoons and just solely coach football. And my life after playing was going to be a transition into the college full time, which would tick all the boxes because it's the school that my three children go to. So all the little bits that you miss out on whilst playing, like their birthdays, assemblies, your little daughter very painfully playing a recorder in chapel, all those little bits that you missed at the time of playing, I've now got to see every single day. And one day we had a fixture against Alan Lee's side and he said, Cole, what are you doing when you finish at Colchester? And I said, oh, I think that's me done. I've had enough, mate. I've sort of fell out of the game a little bit, to be honest. Fell out of love with it. And he said, well, would you come and play for us? And I said, again, with the utmost respect, once I'm done, I'm done. He said, well, would you come and manage us? Thank you, but again, no, thank you. That's me. I'm just going to enjoy my retirement, enjoy my life and spend time with Louisa and the kids. Come home, spoke to Louisa, and she said, well, look, you're going to be, in the nicest possible way, you're going to be horrific on the weekends for me and the kids.
Yeah.
You've gone and watched, my daughter is a very talented footballer herself, so I've gone and watched her in the morning play for Ipswich. And the rest of the day, I'll probably be, there's only so many times I can cut the grass and trim the bushes and and bits like that before you are at a loose end. So I said to her, like, what are you thinking? She said, well, have a try. At least if you try it and like it, then you like it. If you don't, then you're in a position where you probably can step away and at least you've had a bit of a poke at it and a try. Delighted I made the decision I made to go and chat to the club and meet Alan again, meet the chairman, had a bite to eat Muzzy. And arguably one of the best decisions I've made in my footballing journey thus far. It's so rewarding, as Liam would know and Muzzy would know and time gone by. Incredibly rewarding job, because you're dealing with players and people and individuals that do an awful lot for nothing. Volunteers at the club are gold dust. Most of them are volunteers, they don't get paid, so my admiration for them is through the roof. And your admiration for the players that work incredibly hard throughout the day in various jobs and then come across on a Tuesday, Thursday and a Saturday, whatever distance you travel, to give you their last bit of breath, and then it's honestly, it's so rewarding. And I'm delighted I made the decision I made, because it's incredible. So when the chairman spoke about extending it, was a bit of a no-brainer, really, because although our season's kind of pitted out to a bit of a mid-table finish within its own right, it's a huge amount of success for a club that's just been promoted and not been in the league for a long, long time. So, no, I'm delighted I'm signed. I might be speaking on behalf of Muzzy. He might now give you a complete answer, but overall, we're delighted we're staying.
Very similar, to be fair. It is a no-brainer, especially when you've been in and out certain roles in football and the environment you're in is good and the people you're around is good, because when you come out of that, you realise what you had. And then, as we all know, it can end very quickly. And when it does end, you know, everybody goes in their different directions, and you then sort of, them connections and that buzz you get from football and the enjoyment isn't there. So while it's there, grab hold of it with both hands and work your nuts off while you're in a position to be lucky enough to be in a position with a really good club.
But you say, you know, first year in, because I mean, the last time we spoke to Paul, we were going to all these playoffs in step four, and you know, so we're into step three now. And let's be honest, you've had a fantastic season, this season so far. I mean, it's, you know, five games to go. I was just looking at some of the results lately against some of the big boys, and it's draw specialists against the big boys.
Yeah, we. The first season we had together was in step, was the club sort of, it's stagnated for a little spell, and that's no slight on anyone that's gone prior, but it just needed that little bit of an injection. I'm not naive enough to think that the chairman went out of his way to employ me because I'm the next one off the conveyor belt to be Pep Guardiola's successor. I'm not. I know why he'd done it. I'm fresh out of the game. I'm just finishing my time at Ipswich and Colchester, so relatively well known within the area. So he's done it to try and boost the club a little bit, but my desires as a player and wanting to succeed as a player has now sort of followed me into management, where, look, we haven't got the resources that others have got within the league. So weekly, we see that as a great challenge. And the managers that we come up against and clubs that we come up against are incredibly complimentary after games. Have been brilliant. Not come across any bad ones. They've been brilliant because the boys have been really, really competitive. Really competitive. And it wasn't at the start of this season where we're completely naive and, again, we're not arrogant and ignorant enough to go, right, we're going to go and trailblaze this league. It's not. But I knew very, very get-go with the group that we've got and the sort of commitment and dedication and sacrifice. The word I use the most of in football, sacrifice, you have to do it. It's from the age of eight to the age of whenever you finish playing or finish coaching, whatever it means, you sacrifice so much. You sacrifice time for your family. You sacrifice time for just going to youth club when you're a kid because you've got to go training three times a week. You sacrifice Christmases when you've got to go and play, all those bits. And it's the same now. Because we sacrifice so much and we know what we do in-house, we knew we could be competitive. The start of the season took a little bit of an adjustment because it's step four to step three. The difference that I found is depth of group, quality you're bringing into the game, the latter stages of the fixtures. But then the little wraparounds and the context wrapped around your travelling days are different. So our boys, the bulk of our boys, bar two and three, have always been in step four. In step four, due to the geographics of the leagues, you travel a small distance. You don't have to adjust your match day prep, really. So regardless of playing home or away, your match day routine will remain the same. Whereas stepping into step three, we're geographically challenged. So we're having to travel a fair old whack. So boys are having to adjust eating times, having to adjust wake up time, having to adjust probably what they eat, where they eat it. And all those little nuggets and probably a slight internal feeling of inferior crept into the first stage of the season. Albeit our performances were really, really good. We never really, I come away from the first few games feeling like the group didn't have a belief that we could have that extra little push to go on to win a game. Well, as soon as we got to grips of those bits, our run and our form has been up there, like you said, with the very top boys. And that's, again, evident on the weekend when you're playing Harborough, who I think we're going to win the league. Cause hell of a crop of players, great group of management team, lovely setup, real good group. And we've gone there, absorbed a little bit for the first, we've weathered a little bit of a storm for the first 10, 15. But then the second half, the game could have been dead and buried in our favour. And we've been undone by a decision that I've got no airs or graces about that's led to then put another ball into the box. We should have defended it better and then scored a goal. But if we have the cohort for next season and roll into the next season, lads can all commit and are all happy to stay at the football club, I think we'll have another really, really good crack at it next season.
Because someone said to me yesterday, actually, that they thought that the they were talking about possible promotion and so forth, and said that they felt that the Southern League Premier Central was probably the toughest league out of the three that, you know, localish, shall we say, step three leagues in, Premier South, Premier Central and Isthmian Prem. They felt that that was the harder one of the three because of the physicality of it.
I think that's the feeling I've got going along from other people as well, that this year, in terms of the physicality, the distance, and the depths of squad of what people have assembled seems to be the strongest it's been for some time across all three step threes. So from what I've seen and what, you know, what we're coming up against gives you somewhat of a really good feeling. I think me and Carl walked out at half time Saturday and I said, look, this is what reignites the flame to go again. If you walked out feeling beat up and a bit, you know, down with yourself because you've gone in 1-0 down to Harborough, but we were almost like, you know, we can turn these over if we want, you know, if we get a tune out of the lads. So yeah, I do go along with that. I do think it's the hardest it's been for quite a while.
I think the thing that you mentioned there a minute ago about the things that go unnoticed in terms of what you just said about eating times, pre-match times. Everybody's got a routine as a player, and from the outside looking in, we're talking about what time do you have your pre-match, you know, what when do you travel, how do you travel, that extra half an hour that you had to set off, or that extra half hour you had lying in bed that you'd have the extra rest, and the half an hour makes a difference of eating you at 11 instead of half 10 because you're leaving it. And I think that's something that, especially in the non-league game, that is overlooked, because that plays, and that plays such a massive part in a footballer's makeup and a footballer's psyche. And I think that's brilliant what you said there about the other word you use was sacrifice. Now, I think that's something that maybe where on the end I'm working at the moment, I think that's something that I'm a little bit deterred by, I think, because I think younger players nowadays, I don't think they quite understand the sacrifices you really have to make if you're going to be extremely successful or play at the highest you can possibly play. And I think sacrifice is the perfect word to describe how to have a football career or what you have to go through for you to have the best with the tools you've got to be the best you can be with those tools. But the other thing you go on about, you know, Barry, what are you about? 12, is it 12th or 13th? Hovering around there. And, you know, which in your first season is brilliant. But I also look at geographically that a lot of the teams in that top half of the table are your Midland-based teams. And you've got your Kettering, Aylesbury, Worcester around there. You've got Bedford, sort of our end as well. I'm based in Rugby. You know, and you look at that, and Harborough is obviously 20 minutes from me. And the pool the pool that they've got to pull from, I'm surprised that there's a lot of them, Redditch, another one, Quorn. They're all in our Midland area and that bubble. And you could probably say that a player in Hales Owen now, with the money that's going around in the game, would travel to Quorn for an hour and 15 minutes. And that's really the travelling time. So a player in Birmingham could play for a player now in South Leicestershire or West Leicestershire. And I think geographically for you guys, I think that's a brilliant first season in that league, coming into that league, just knowing how strong the league is around him. Banbury fits into that sort of criteria too. And yeah, it's very heavily Midlands based, isn't it?
It is. And it's eye-opening, to be honest.
Like, yeah.
First step into management was in step four, and you know, or Muzzy certainly does, you get to know groups and managers, and as you progress and your relationships build, they're slightly transparent with, look, you can only take their stories as what their stories are, but they're slightly transparent in what they're paying players and what their budgets are and who's earning what, and that, or that's, this club's paying that. But the eye-opening bit for me stepping into step three is the money that players are offered or being paid, and it's I wouldn't say alarming, because it's they've got people out there, football clubs, that can pay it and want to pay it. So look, you've got no airs or graces. It's there. That's them. That's happy for them. Brilliant. Go on, earn your money where you should earn your money. But they're the bits that I like, in the sense that it's a challenge. It's because we can't do that, and we are, like you said, and I've touched on earlier, geographically challenged. Like, you're travelling to the same sort of pool every away game. There's a cluster of them, really good clubs, big clubs with good players in around a relatively smallish pond. But we see it as a challenge every single week. And I think, and that you never want to come across to your own players like it's patronising, or you're like, oh, keep going, lads. Like, we don't pay what they pay, but keep going. You're doing really, really well. It's not in the slightest. Like, we know what we are, we know what we've got, and they know the same. We're relatively honest. We have to be honest and transparent with our group. And they're the same. Go into every fixture with, now we've got that inner belief and that growth. And it's not an arrogance, but it is, we can go toe-to-toe with any group within the league and have a good tear-up and a good... And we, again, we don't try and reinvent the wheel. We're not portraying to try and reinvent the wheel, but we've got a relatively bespoke way of doing stuff. And it's so pleasing when you do go to a place like Harbour. Like I said, they have a really good crop. You watch your games prior and they're hell of a group, really good group. And the manager, Mitch, top fella, good fella. And then you go there, play against them and play them off the pitch to a degree. Get back in your car to drive home, or get back on the bus to drive back. And you're like, yeah, incredible. It fills you with so much pride. It really, really does.
How does that coach journey, coach journey or car journey feel though on the way home, when, when you have, sort of, as you say, looking like you're going to come away with 3 points and then they snatch an equaliser in 96?
Yeah, So I the week of all weeks last week, I had a 15-year-old dog that I had to put to sleep on Friday morning. So honestly, it was absolutely heartbreaking for us as a family, like terrible.
Mm.
Like, got 3 young children and they've come across with us on the Friday morning. They're adamant. I think they just wanted the day off school to come and say goodbye to the dog. So with a little bit of honesty, I've said the same to Paul on the phone Saturday. So I drove across separate because I wanted to spend the time in the morning with the family on a Saturday morning. The boys and Muzz got the bus across. So I was there at the game, but I don't know if you guys have been through it and you've...
Yeah.
People that have had animals, or some people that haven't. I can remember walking into... I said the same to Muzzy. I walked into a change room at Bristol City years ago. I was a young lad at Bristol City. We'd not long signed John Stead from Ipswich. Steady's crying. Like, I'm like, oh, Steady, what's up, my pal? What's the matter? He said, I've just had to put my dog to sleep. I'm like, I've never grew up with dogs. And I was a little bit like, really?
Hmm.
Then as I got older, I've got grown, I've had dogs in my adult life, and we've had dogs as a family. Heartbreaking, heartbreaking. So when I had that Friday morning, then said to Muzz, I'm going to drive across separate because I want to spend the time with Louise and the kids, and I'll try and shoot back after the game, because we'll come onto the roller coaster of emotion shortly, because you wouldn't believe it, guys. I know you wouldn't believe it, but I've actually just turned 40 yesterday. You're probably all thinking, how are you only just 40? But I've had a rollercoaster of emotions over the weekend. So I said to Muzz, I said, look, I'm going to drive across separate because we've had what we've had and I need to get back for a bite to eat with Louise and some friends. But so in answer to your original question, it was a bit like, so proud of the boys for the way they played. They scored last minute but my emotions were, I don't know if it's rightfully or wrongfully, people that are watching this, and you may disagree, were kind of a bit like, it is what it is. In the grand scheme, I've got three young children at home that are heartbroken, which is the most important thing in life. My wife's heartbroken because we've had to put our dog to sleep. So I said to Muzz, I said, Muzz, if I'm being honest, mate, like, thank you for what you guys have done. They're unbelievable, the guys that I've got. Going back to the point about wrapping yourself with good people, I know full well that they would have picked up on that. And they sort of drove it a little bit. I'm not an overly vocal manager as it is, but they probably drove a little bit more in terms of driving the standards and getting after lads a little bit more. And I was just kind of like, so proud of you lads for what you've just done. They'll go on to win the league, and you've had a right good crack at them. Unbelievable the way you played, your bravery and stuff in possession, incredible. Mm. And then I got my car, spoke to Muzzy, and then my mind was, that football bit was then parked. I'm now on to the most important thing in my life, my wife and my kids. So in answer to your question, it probably might sink in 4 weeks' time where I'm sat on a sun lounger somewhere and be like, oh my God, what a kick to the heart that last minute at Harborough was. But as it stands right now, it was just pride, I think, for the boys and... Yeah, a little bit gutting in the situation that I had.
I mean, am I right in saying, though, because, I mean, I've noticed it with quite a few clubs that have got promoted. Do you honestly feel that the real sort of work for you starts sort of in the summer, so you don't get that sort of second season dip that you seem to get with quite a lot of clubs where they get that, they go up, people sort of not expecting you to play a certain way, you play that way, then... They know how you're going to play in season two. They might have come along and nicked a couple of your players because you've got some decent players. Is season two the real sort of big challenge for Berry in step three?
Go on, Mus.
Well, it is. I would say it's not even. I don't wait that long, and Cole probably, probably gets a little bit impatient with me because I'm already we're already thrashing around a few ideas and. You know, looking at other squads and looking at playing time and getting feelers out there. And I'm quite open and honest about it because I think everybody's the same. And if you're slow to the party, unfortunately, that's going to reflect within your business and how you start the season. And so I get what you're saying about the second season syndrome. It's a conversation that, has been had. But like I said, you've got to put in the work. You've got to put in that sacrifice to go and, this time of year, it's quite easy to put your feet up and not go and watch that game on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night or watch the footage you can get hold of. But if you want to be successful, no different to a player, you've got to do the hard yards whenever you can. So, yeah, that's where we're at this point in time.
Mm. I mean... With it as well, you're saying you're doing like due diligence of going to games and watching. Has that become, do you think the actual sort of video side of it has come a lot more easier in the last few years because everybody seems to be filming games and VO machines are out than it was maybe five to 10 years ago when if you was involved in that non-league, you've then got that scenario of if you want to find out what's going on, you've got to ask your mate who's played them last week or you've got to physically go to that game that might be, no disrespects. If you're in Waltham Abbey, you're going to go all the way out to Wroxham if you've got them next week or whatever. So you've got to travel that distance to try and find out. Has that now, do you feel, become a lot easier to see your opposition?
I think so. Like, certainly, we have the luxuries of wise and various bits. Within our level, it's still, of course, you can pick up on little bits, but you build relationships. You lean on favours. You're obviously... The one bit that I struggled my very, well, probably the hardest to get my head around is the turnaround of, certainly in step four, you'd have your games filmed, every game you filmed, and then you're, like I said, leaning on people to send you footage of who they've just played against. 3 days later, they've got six new players. Mm. They're like, you'd identify certain individuals with certain strengths within groups, but then you kind of, building your prep in two sections in terms of consistencies within behaviours of groups, in terms of the style of play, the way the manager sets up, the sort of key areas and key focuses on trends, where they look to go, where they look to build, all those bits. And then you're highlighting certain individuals. But like I said, with the individuals, it's tough because then they're jumping from someone to someone to someone and you've played them four times or whatever it may be in one season. Whereas as the league's gone up, the consistencies are better, I think. Groups don't change as much. We've been fortunate in the sense that we've had a relatively consistent group for 3 years. So teams will pick up on trends for us. So we make small adaptations within our framework as such. Again, I'm not trying to sound all modern and technical, I'm not, but we make small adaptations to counteract opposition, but have a huge emphasis on in-house and how we go about our business and how we go about our work, and pump the lads full of inner belief, because they are superior, an incredible group to work with, super group to work with. And it, like I said, it has built for us. But going back to your original, having access, you are leaning on groups. Of course, not everyone's going to want to give you access to some footage. Of course they're not. But we are, you do lean on favours. Like Muzzy, like I said, from day dot, he's probably got one of the biggest black books in football. He'll know anyone and everyone. So he'll certainly reach out to people and they'll give you some footage. And yeah, but it probably is easier than years gone by, I'm sure.
Just going on, you've just mentioned something I was going to bring in actually about black book, Muzzy. I work with, really, really fortunate, I work with Paul Holloran. It was 5 years, he's number two at Leamington. And we got ourselves up to the Conference North. Obviously, they're going down again this year. But the one thing before I left, he said, you know, if you ever want to go and be a manager again, which I didn't really want to do, I felt I was a better number two, you just need to replenish that black book every 2 years. And judging, I think he had 1,000 games in charge at Leamington, and he was there for 18 years or whatever, he was there. And in our area, he's one of the, biggest sort of success stories of non-league management. And I'll never forget that. And it's really, really difficult when, I love it though, when the way you talk about, you're sitting on your sun lounger in 4 weeks' time, and it actually doesn't work like that, does it really? Because you know you'll be on your sun lounger, but you know you're not going to miss a phone call from somebody that you could get on. The player comes to you and you're on the beach, you're going to take that course out. I'll see you, girls. I'll see you in 10 minutes. Because it's in you. It's all right, people saying, oh, I never answer my phone on a Sunday because I'm not answering my phone on a Sunday. But not answering your phone on a Sunday and that finer detail, that could be the difference between him going to Hemel Hempstead or him coming to you, and it might just be a one chance phone call and you can't miss it. As a management team, you again, go back right to the start about sacrifices you have to make. It's people don't realise step three. Oh, it's only step three. No, it's like a full-time job. It's a full-time job at a part-time football club. And again, the outside, they don't see that. They don't see it, which is why I commend you both, because I had my time in the Conference North with Nuneaton and Corby, and it's our graft. You're non-stop, are you? You're non-stop, and I really take my hats off to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and it's probably like you said, Liam. It's a good trait and it's a bad trait, and you've got to have an incredibly understanding wife that sits there and will let you take the phone calls. But I always think, if we miss that opportunity, like you said, I could go and watch 10 games and note a few players down. But as soon as, like you say, that message comes up or somebody pops up in your inbox, and I always think, oh, should I leave it? I should go and have that meal or whatever. But I can't. And Cole's been brilliant for me because he gives you you're always like, come on, mate, you need to go and do that. But yeah. I always feel like that's your success, what you're measured on. I'm not as good a coach as what Cole is on the grass, but then if you can bring someone else to the party by not letting that slide past you, then it's kind of, yeah, it's a good trait. It's a bad trait as well, because you obviously, sometimes your focus isn't where it should be.
But again, going back to what we spoke about the best signing manager or mate will be his number two. That's the chemistry you need, isn't it? You've said, oh, he's better on the grass than I am, but I can do things that, and that's good when you've got a manager, you're with a manager that does delegate. And I'm a bit, I used to struggle and I still struggle with the delegation side of it, because I still want to do it myself. I want to take the session. I want to speak to the player. I want to sort his money out. But you can't, you've got to be able to, and again, that's why you need somebody that works with alongside you that can just take that bit of pressure off you. I mean, my assistant manager at the academy is Calvin Langmead, who's the Banbury manager. And we speak about it all day, every day. Who you got this week, Langers? Who you got there? And you don't realise the detail, like yourselves, that managers at step three have to go through, like what you, oh, what did you do? Oh, well, I went away. We had Leaston away at the weekend, but Sunday afternoon, the kids went to the beach and wherever they went, and I'm watching the highlights from Saturday. I'm looking at how we can improve next week, or big games over Easter, and I need to get the video of Redditch or whoever. It's just non-stop, isn't it, really? And also go back to what you said about the fixture turnaround as well. That league is just it's relentless, isn't it? Saturday, Tuesday, it is relentless. And like you said, these boys go to work all day, by the way.
Yeah.
can I take you guys back to the 29th of April, 2025?
Yep.
Still got a headache from it, I think.
Yeah. But I mean, what was that like going into the semi-finals? You're going to the semi-finals against, against Waltham Abbey there. And I mean, I know the Abbey are a good side, you know, and you know, so you're going up against, you know, another decent side, you know, like yourself. I mean, what was your day like, or what days, should we say, days were like leading up to that? And how did that day go for you? I mean, it went really well, but you know, how did it go as such in your mind for you guys?
Yeah, it's tough because you try to, granted the magnitude of the game, it's the biggest game the club's had for a little spell, but you're trying your best to keep the normality attached to it for the group. You don't want to come away, and it's, you hear it all the time, you don't want to come away from the norm too much by then derailing stuff. Mm. So of course there's slight attachments to the prep because of the turnarounds, like you said, the turnarounds of the fixture. It's not like the Football League where you go end of the season, slight extension of your time, and then you're back into, like, it's bang, it's Saturday straight into the Tuesday, straight into the Saturday. It's tough, it's intense. So you're trying your best to prep the boys the best you can. So we had, like, again, you'd lean on favours. So going back to some members of staff from Ipswich, you say, look, can you come in and an extra hands for the masseur or the masseuses in terms of preparation for the game. And then the numbers on the gates will obviously play a part. So we're very fortunate. Our attendances are incredibly good at Bury. We get good crowds, but our highest in the league might have been 1,000, 1,200. The playoffs then soon step into 2,000. So that's going to play a part. How can you sow enough seeds or prep the boys psychologically before the game, so not stepping out going, whoa, this is way too big for us, we're going to wilt, we're going to curl up, we're going to... So it's, again, I'm slightly detracting away from your original question. In the answer to your original question, it's incredible to go through what we went through, because both sides that we played in the playoffs beat us twice throughout the season. Waltham Abbey quite convincingly done us twice. Brightlingsea, the games were slightly closer, but still beat us with sprinkles of really good play and good goals from them. So then we had to try and, again, prep the boys the best way we can psychologically to overcome those hurdles. And the boys on the evenings, absolutely exceptional. Because it gone from the last game of the season, if we won, we guaranteed second, which guarantees you obviously home and home in the playoffs if you win the semi-final and win the final. But again, with a slight mind on the playoffs, we didn't rest the boys to completely come off the gas. We didn't. We made a couple of changes. We ended up drawing the game. So you could almost feel the chairman walking behind me after the game burning inside, thinking, that could have just cost us thousands if we get to certain stages of the playoffs. It just so happened that we had home and home in the playoffs. And again, up there with some of the best feelings I've had in football thus far. There's an unbelievable picture I've got somewhere in the office here. The first person I saw from the final that's jumped the hurdles, jumped the barriers as such to run on the pitch is my son. So incredible. Like, my son's running onto the pitch, like shouting. You can hear him, and amongst these thousands of fans, you can hear him shouting, "Daddy, you did it, you did it, you did it." And again, for anyone that's... I'm slightly deepening this chapter.
He's gone. Gaffy, you've gone.
Oh my God, I'm gone. I'm still parked in front. I'm talking about putting my dog to sleep. But that's, again, that's why we do it. That's why we sacrifice and give up all those little moments of time for situations like that. My son's run on the pitch, and he's the first person I've seen. So, incredible. Again, I answered your question. Incredible, incredible moments for the whole time. So we're very well supported over the two games.
I mean, am I right in saying the game against Brighton, so you went right to the last kickings?
Yeah, and might as well put a little bit more context around the individual that scored the goal. Someone that's incredible individual. Ed Upton, his name is, had a great footballing career himself. I played against him numerous times throughout our journeys. He was at Millwall, he was at Yeovil, he started at Ipswich as a boy. He's a, well, Muzz, you can fill in the gaps. You know him really well. He's a great human.
Yeah, yeah, incredible. Like I said, he's, when he came out of football, very similar. He wanted to spend more time with his family. I was manager at Stone Market Town. Was fortunate enough to be able to sign him there. And we clicked, even though he was a Bury boy, we kind of knew each other, but not as well. And then when I went across to Bury, it was actually the chairman that actually stepped in and said, "Why are you not thinking about Ed?" And I was, you know, it was a few different things, but mainly finance. Didn't want to insult him, to be fair, with what, and that's no, again, no disrespect to Bury, but I knew what he was on at a previous club, so it was like, where does this balance sit? But the chairman was incredibly good at getting him across, and we'd had several conversations with him, hadn't we, Gaffer, about what he was doing the following season, about he'd stepped into full-time work, so there was an element in the season where he was adjusting himself to full-time work and being on his feet all day and then getting to grips with non-league football. And then he just came into his own. And that last game, we were actually talking about the subs we were going to make, weren't we?
Yeah.
Gaffer, and then this incredible moment happened where the ball's come into him. He shifted it with a great touch and put it into the top corner and happened to be in front of his family and his hometown football club. And what a way to finish when you've had a real long professional career to step into your non-league setting and then win it for your own hometown football club and then retire is incredible. And like I said, for him, he's such a good guy as well. Such a good guy for it to happen to.
Yeah.
I think I said to you, Paul, a few times when you've been on, you know, Bury up until last season, we're a side that everybody expected to be in the playoffs or pushing for promotion sort of year after year after year when I've been doing this show. And it used to get to a certain period of the season and all of a sudden they'd be up there and all of a sudden the results would start going the wrong way and he'd start dropping right back into sort of mid-table or top, you know, top to mid-table almost every year. So sort of last year, you got to that sort of stage last year and you're thinking, is it going to happen again? Is it going to happen again? And of course, this time around, it did. And you went all the way and got out of the league.
Yeah, that, I mean, it's a good job it was. It was third time lucky for me. Otherwise, I'd have lost in the playoffs three times and it probably would have finished me off, if I'm honest. I'd have been hanging off the Orwell Bridge somewhere.
So with that, I was literally looking at the on football webpage, just looking at the teams that played in that semi-final. And I was looking at the Waltham Abbey side, and he's actually, and this is that I know of, is at least 12 of those players from the 16 that was named on the day, the five subs, 11 playing, that are still playing for the team now. So out of your 16 that played on that day, is there still, have you still got majority of that squad now with you?
Yeah, we have. We've, like I said, we've been relatively consistent. We've had a real good group. So there's been a couple of changes. Like Ed, for one, we were gutted when Ed's left. And it's the best way for him to finish. He's like you said, had a career. He's scored the winning goal to promote his hometown club. It was then sort of into the sunset, kind of written in the star story. That it was incredible for him. Gutted to have lost him. We made a couple of signings in the summer. Boys that we've signed, George Quantrell from Leicester, that's been around the level for a little spell, incredibly talented lad. We signed Tom Hughes from King's Lynn, that again was a young pro at Ipswich when I was there. So he's come and signed for the club off connections that we've had prior. Ollie Camphor left and then has come back and probably been within the four or five that we've made have been sort of season defining signings really. Jamie McGrath from Needham Market that we brought in. But outside of that, the bulk of the group have been, it's been relatively consistent, but the signings have been, you hear it a lot from managers, they have to be good personalities and fit into your dressing room and be good eggs, for want of a better term. Mm. the ones we've have been managed by players that have been there a little while and got to know the club. The blend's really good. The sort of age demographic's really good, but the personalities are top. But then to bring in the players that we brought in, because they can see what we try to do. Again, I don't sit here now trying to pull the wool over people's eyes and say that we're the best at what we do. We're different. We're so different. We're reinventing this. We're not. We try our very, very best with what we got to bridge that gap between professionalism and non-league the best we can and give them the best experience. Because we go back to the point we said about earlier where they're working hard all day. The last thing they want is to come across where your environment's no good, your setup's no good, you bang after them all the time. You still need to have that. Anyone and everyone that plays football, regardless of what level, you need to enjoy your being. Of course, you need to know your worth, but you need to enjoy your being. So we try our best to bridge that gap between professional and non-league, but create an environment where they do come and enjoy their football. And we're human beings. We get it. If they call us and say, Gaffer, Mars, look, I've had a tough time. I've got this, and this. Not an issue. Not an issue. Your family's your most important. Go and do a bit with your family, but make sure you're tuned in. We do Zoom calls. So we don't train every Tuesday, Thursday. There might be a Tuesday where we do a Zoom call because we've got lads that travel from a distance and have got tough jobs. We do a Zoom call Tuesday where we've got an S&C coach that will lead a call down or a bit of a pulse raiser, and then we'll touch base on the grass on Thursday, roll into a Saturday. And sometimes that can flip.
Mm.
I think that helps in keeping a consistent group. That's my point. They bought into what we're trying to do. They see what we're trying to do is good. So they're not looking to jump somewhere else for an extra £100-200 a week, because what they're getting, it's good and it suits them. It fits their life, but it gives them that. Because we are a good group and what we're trying to do, it gives them that desire to want to go and achieve.
Yeah. I mean, you put it into some kind of context, the win over the Abbey in that semi-final. And I've just pulled up Football Web pages. In 10 games previous to that, you only actually won 3 of them against the Abbey. You're going all the way back to 2015.
Yeah, and like I said, they've done us in the season. Incredible. Fair play to them. Brilliant. We went away from home. We were winning 1-0. There was a freak goal that happened that then swung the momentum in the game. Then they've done us 3-1. At home, we were okay, sort of dictated most of the possession, but then they done us on the break, beat us twice, and they were comfortable winners, really. And then you step into that, and we're probably saying, again, Muzz, with a little bit of transparency and honesty, you're probably thinking you don't want to play Waltham Abbey in the semi-final, if I'm being honest. Yeah.
Because they were exactly that.
It kind of had our card marked a little bit. And then the first 15 minutes of the game were probably like that. They probably edged the game, and then it takes moments, it can take seconds, it can take an instant, it can take an individual. It took an individual on the evening to go, nah, this is that, sad. He's probably dead, grabbed a game by the screen. One occasion where the ball's just span into the air, touch, smooth the game out, played the ball wide, and you're like, that's the one that's just gone bang, took the heat out of everything. And then we went on to convincingly. We won the game, quite convincingly. And then the final against Brighton City was quite the opposite. Again, it was quite cagey for obvious reasons because of the circumstance and the occasion. And then they edged the game. They had the better of the chances. They were the better side on the day. Probably should have won the game. Hence why we're talking about what changes we can make in extra time to bring that little bit of spice. And then Ed, again, produced that sprinkle of magic to separate the two sides.
But do you think going into those sort of playoff games, though, that the danger going into them is that if you played the team twice during the season, you've beaten them twice. You know, no disrespect. Every time you hear that, 9 times out of 10, the team that's lost twice normally wins the game. I mean, as I said to you, I think I said to Paul, you know, back in the day when, you know, Harlow went and played Heybridge Swifts in the semi-final a few years back, you know, and Heybridge Swifts have beaten us in the FA Cup and home and away in the league. We lost three games out of three. Get there, and their manager decides to take the Manager of the Month award in the middle of the pitch before the semi-final. And the minute he did that, I actually turned round to the secretary of the club and went, "We've won this game." Because you always seem to have that, don't you? If someone gets that Manager of the Month, they always lose the next game. And we ended up beating them. Went to the final to play Witham, who we'd beaten twice, home and away, and got turned over by them. And I think that's a little bit of a concern this year for Waltham Abbey, because if they end up getting Felixstowe at any point, they've turned them over twice and convincingly turned them over twice you know, in the league. So it'll be that will be an interesting one to keep an eye on. But do you feel that that is a swing? And if that's the case and you're on the other end of it, like you were against Waltham Abbey, how do you try and motivate those boys in that dressing room when they've all, that team that you're about to play in a really, really important game has already turned you over twice?
I think there's already a calmness, isn't there, Gaffer? It's like there's a calmness within you that you know that what you've been up against in league games, but then you're going in that, you know, everybody's been in there long enough. Like, anyone can beat anyone in a one-off game. Like your prep. Once you've done that and you feel like you've nailed that, then you're going, well, look, this is, forget what's gone before. We're now going to go toe to toe from you. And again, tactically, and you know, so many elements that come together in one game of football. Who's got the stomach for it? Like Cole said, who can smooth the game out? Who wants to put their head in? I think there was a moment in that Waltham Abbey game where they hit the bar, and again, it was decent chance. And you're thinking that year before we'd done exactly the same. With I think it was like a triple attack where we had hit the bar, the goalkeeper saved, there's one off the line, and you kind of go, oh, that's our moment against Brentwood. I think the same against Waltham Abbey, but let's say, going back to your question, I think you can think too deeply about it. That one off game, you've got to do, you know, you've got to prep for it and see where your mindset's at as the group, really.
So, I mean, you said, Paul, that you and, you know, that was your third time in the playoffs. I mean, what was your mindset like going into that game, into both of them?
Yeah, kind of one of them that you could think, I've got to win one of these sooner rather than later. And then you've got these little things in your head where Brentwood, a laugh with Jez, who's the Brentwood chairman, we keep in touch now. And the first one against him was horrendous. Rob Stringer, I think, had a little dance in front of me when they beat us and gave me a nice strong handshake when they'd won, and it was quite a feisty affair. And then the second time with Berry was, we had another one where they won against us, and one of their chaps did dance in front of us, didn't I? And I said, not again.
It's always obviously doesn't fill you with anger at all when someone's dancing in front of you that's just beat you in the playoffs.
So what my mindset going into it, again, it was probably different. Again, I felt we were so much better prepped. I felt like because the group hadn't changed a lot, that was in our favour. The year before, I don't think we'd strengthened in time, and the change, if we, you know, there was any changes, would have been too late. Whereas this time round, we prepped prior, thinking, well, if we make it, our depth is a lot stronger going into this. So I felt like our prep, not just for the game but weeks prior, was so different, and again it proved right this time, thankfully, but definitely learnt a lot from it. It was an experience where I got it wrong once, definitely as a manager, and then as an assistant as well.
So we go back to this year then. I mean, you've got five games to go. Worcester at home at the weekend, in Leeston, then Stamford, Barwell, Kettering. I mean, is it 15 points you're looking for?
Oh, yeah, we're knocking bandy week in, week out. if only. That's the thing we spoke about the last couple of weeks. We had a position probably two or three weeks ago where we've had a really good run, a real good crack at it, and you probably are looking at that playoff spot with a little bit of optimism, but we could have given ourselves a genuine chance of having a late surge. Whereas now it's striking that balance of, like Liam's said and like you said, it's probably hit the nail on the head in the sense that it's that second season. We're no longer the unknown quantity of Bury Town in the league. People will... And I don't think it's an intentional disrespect. It certainly won't be. But teams might be of a mindset, certainly earlier in the season, this team's just come up, we might be okay against them. I don't know if that's their approach or what. But now it will be a case of, well, no, Bury have come to us last year and they've done us over proper. So now, you know what I'm trying to get at. So it's now for us as managers and players and staff at the club to... keep at it, drive at it, because it's you need that momentum rolling into the tail end of the season to then give you a real good step into pre-season, rolling into the next season. So the boys know that, we know that. It's a case of wanting to win every game from now till then. The club are very supportive in their approach. The club's in a good spot. It's on a sort of cusp of a wave where the club has been relatively stable and sort of stagnated for a few years. Now they've had a few seasons of success. They've really bought into it as a talent. So it's keeping that really, keeping that feel-good factor around the place and both on the pitch and off the pitch for us for the last five games.
You're probably going to say to me you've already started when I ask this question, but I mean, is it now a case of talking to the players you've got, making sure they're still going to be around for next season, and sort of delving even more into Paul's little black book?
Honestly, I think he carries around two of them now. It's one's for that one. I think that is the case, and again, Liam, you'd known it for years gone by. Your talks and your chats are forever ongoing. You're getting a feeder for, like I said, our age demographic's quite good, and being geographically challenged is sometimes, or a lot of the time, a negative. It can sometimes roll into a positive in the sense that travelling from sort of Ipswich, Bury, Colchester way to quite a distance isn't so appealing to a lot of the players. So you can get the feel and the feeders out internally with how the boys are feeling, what their intentions are. And of course, we're not in the game of professionalism. It's non-league, so lads have got so many contexts wrapped around their situations. It might be jobs, it'd be children, it'd be wives, it'll be family commitments, life commitments on weekends. They all play a big part. Mm. We've tried that each year of learning. For me, I'm still forever learning. It's trying to get ahead of it slightly earlier each time to get a feel of the group and then sort of nail them ones in. Right, them ones are done, them ones are parked. Those ones might be leaving, that one's leaving, so that frees up that. How can we manipulate that into recruiting the best for that position? Because again, a lot of chairmen's, ours is an incredible guy, the way he runs the club, incredibly stable, you've got admiration for it, but he doesn't want to carry two or three or four people in the stands every Saturday. We can't afford to do it. Mm. So you have to recruit and bring in players that can cover a couple of bases, really, because we've got to work with what we've got. We can't just hold on to a squad of 25 and be like, right, he's injured for a spell, so this one comes straight in, that one, and it's... So those conversations are forever ongoing.
Liam, have you ever been in that situation where you end up with that second season situation?
No, I sometimes look at it the other way, and I think... I have been in that situation, yeah, with Leamington. I mean, the first year we got on the Conference North, I think we finished, I think, 11th, and we finished above Stockport County and York City. You're only talking to nine years ago. Mm. And the second season, yeah, we got relegated. We missed out, I think, North Ferriby on the last game of the season, or Stalybridge or some of the last game of the season. And yeah, we found that. But I look at it almost now in terms of the your situation now at Bury. I actually think, from what I've heard from the outside, especially being in the Midland area, that you play in a certain way, and it is an entertaining style of football, but you're very, very organised and you've got good structure. And I sometimes think there's my opinion, there's people playing at it in non-league football. From what I've heard from the outside, when you've got that structure and that philosophy and that style of play, you'll never lose that. And it's not as though you've just had one goal scorer that scored 38 goals a season and he's going anyway. You know, that could then turn that into a really bad second season. But like you said about the group that you've had, that you've progressively built and stayed with, I think that's the difference. And I really do think that maybe people are now looking, like you said a minute ago, actually, they came here and tonked us last year. We've got to be mindful here. They're going to look, well, Bury would have strengthened a bit as well. And they've had a great first season in mid-table position. So I think it could be the other way around. It's like when teams win the league in step four and they get promoted. You're on the crest of a wave, aren't you? You know, you've had that success and you're going into that season full of beans, et cetera, et cetera. But I think I think there's some teams in that league where, and yourselves included, that I think, again, from the outside looking in, I think, not put too much pressure on you lads here, but I think you could have a real good push in the playoffs next year. No pressure.
Cheers, mate.
One last question. Is there any chance, though, with the when the, you know, the league's come out, that you could be shifted into the Isthmian Prem? Or is it, would it be a case of you'll stay where you are?
Damn. Yeah. He'll be grinning from ear to ear with that question.
Yeah. I don't think so. As much as for me geographically, I've gone from being step four, probably the best spot. So I've stayed in Ipswich. So we live in Ipswich. So our games last year in step four would have been predominantly A12. Then Bury's obviously A14, and then there's two or three fixtures just past Bury. Whereas now I'm at sort of the bottom of the ladder and the map. Everything goes A14, Birmingham way. So now Muzzy's laughing like this, like, oh, another drive for you, Gaffer. So
I didn't see his car, Liam. I never knew the Gaffer could drive until this season.
I'm his full-time petrol card, him. So, yeah, although the shift of leagues might be beneficial for me, I really can't see it happening, I think. Sort of setting that Bury would stay that way.
Well, listen, guys, time's run away from us. I really appreciate you coming on tonight, and we do hope that you guys have a cracking end to the season and a great start to next season as well. So thank you for coming on and giving up your time, and also to you, Liam, as well, for coming on. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time when we've got a gentleman called Jack Spring is going to come and join us from Soosh Films. He has just made, in conjunction with the Northern Premier League, a mockumentary, he's calling it, is what they're calling it, of a life in non-league football. And it's a comedy pilot, and the guy has made films for Amazon Prime. He's also done films as well for Netflix as well. And he's going to come on and talk about it. It's out now on YouTube. I'll put the link in the show later on. But he's basically on YouTube. It came out on March the 28th. So have a good look at this new life in non-league, it's called. And it's, as I said, it's a comedy film made by Soosh Films and set around a fictional non-league football club and the volunteers, committee members and match day staff who keep it running week to week. I haven't had the chance to see it myself. I'm going to sit down and watch it now and see how good it is. And we will see Jack and hopefully Liam as well in 2 weeks' time. But from me, from Cole, from Paul and Liam, thanks for watching and good night.